All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Monday morning recap episode of the PFF College Football Podcast. I'm, of course, Seth Galina, and I'm joined by Anthony Tresh to go over the big games from this weekend. Tresh, how was your Saturday?
It was pretty good. There was a lot of good football. I just chilled back, got a little fall weather going on. It was great. How about you?
Yeah, it was like I wouldn't know about the weather because I was inside the whole day, but I'm sure it was good, I guess. There was some fun games. But we're going to start with the one that I think kind of went the way we expected. I'm not saying we wanted it to go this way, because I think we wanted to see a close game. But Clemson does what they do, and they beat another ACC team handedly, 42-17 against Miami. Not Trevor Lawrence's best game ever, but it doesn't matter. You know, when you have that type of talent everywhere on the field and the way that the defense was able to bottle up Derek King, I mean, again, it kind of went the way we didn't want. Like, we kind of deluded ourselves into thinking it wasn't going to go this way. But then, this is what Clemson does, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. I really wanted Derek King to ball out. And I think my biggest takeaway from this one is that, you know, he's definitely a clear tier below college football's elite quarterbacks. I don't think he can get up there, just because, I mean, you think about the elite guys, they can go toe-to-toe with that defense. But Derek King, from a passing perspective, I mean, it was bad. From a clean pocket, he averaged just over 3 yards attempts. I mean, he had a passer grade in the low 50s, barely got anything going downfield when he was in a clean pocket. I mean, his mobility was on full display, of course. I mean, I thought that would be, no matter what, he would put up numbers on the ground, but I was worried about, you know, through the air, and he kind of verified that. They just had a quarter of their passes generate positive expected points added per play. And for those who don't know, that is really, really bad. But yeah, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, he had some mad mistakes in there, but I mean, Travis Etienne, that was my biggest takeaway. I thought this guy was gonna, from day one, I thought he would blow up like this. I thought he'd have every single game like this, but he was a little bit quiet there at the start. I mean, he was still good, but this was the Travis Etienne that I fell in love with last year.
Yeah, and I think with King, it's like, at some point we're just going to have to say, you know, what I've been saying the whole year is like, all right, wait for him to get in sync with his receivers and that passing attack, and maybe that's just not ever going to happen. Now, I mean, you know, you don't want to take too much away from going against a Clemson. Miami's just not at Clemson's level yet. We wanted to tell ourselves that yes, they were, because they were undefeated and because they killed Florida State, but it's like, well, Florida State's not good. And so we wanted to tell ourselves that, but like, so anyways, getting back to the point that I was making is like, well, maybe we just shouldn't ever think that King is going to be this type of player in this offense. You know, as much as we want to talk about Rhett Lashley and stuff, you know, maybe he just worked better in Kendall Briles' offense in Houston. And there are similarities there, but maybe he just worked better in that offense. And maybe it's just never going to happen. Maybe, like, you know, the outside receiver talent is not dominant. And I think maybe that's what they had at Houston relative to their competition there, and that he just doesn't have this year. All right, let's move on to probably the most fun game of the day on Saturday, and that's Alabama 63, Ole Miss 48. Back and forth game. It really came down to Lane Kiffin deciding to kick a field goal and cut the score to 4 instead of really trying to get a touchdown when his defense couldn't stop anybody. And the funny thing is, he goes and kicks an onside kick, which was one of the calls, you know, if that goes through, it's like one of the calls of this early season. So he knew his defense couldn't stop anybody, and then kicking the field goal was kind of the antithesis of that. But at the same time, like, I've been in those situations where, you know, your center fumbles a snap and you go backwards for 7 yards when you're moving the ball. And maybe this is why we, like, every coach needs like a dedicated person in the booth to make these decisions, because you're the play caller and the head coach, and you get so down when these type of things happen that you don't think clearly. And the clear move was to go for it, even though it was like 4th and 13 or something like that. I think the clear move was to go for it. He doesn't. They kick a field goal, and then Alabama goes down the field and ends the game, really, and puts them up by too many points. With that said, wow, this was so fun. This was so fun. Matt Corral is bawling out of his mind right now. We know Mac Jones is going to be incredible. I think 28 for 32 for 417 yards. How much fun did you have watching this game?
Yeah, I was so excited just because before the game, I wanted to tell myself that Ole Miss was going to keep it close for maybe the first or second quarter. That was my expectations. I was like, we're going to get a quarter or two of fun football with Lane Kiffin in there. But no, this was toe-to-toe all the way into the fourth quarter. So, I mean, I was jumping up and down. I was hyped. But that Ole Miss defense, man, that is one of the worst SEC defenses I've seen in a while. Right now, on a per-play efficiency basis, they are dead last in college football. And that's even including Campbell, Eastern Kentucky, that have played some of these Power 5 schools. I mean, Ole Miss is just getting roasted and toasted like a marshmallow in that secondary. But that offense, I'm really excited to see what Lane Kiffin does here in about 3 or 4 years when he starts to get some recruits in there, because I think he's going to build – I think he's going to build a juggernaut, like a powerhouse program at Ole Miss. I mean, what he did, I mean, this offense last year was not good. And now it's one of the best, not even in the SEC, in all of college football. I mean, Matt Corral, I mean, they just kept attacking the slot. Elijah Moore and Kenny Yeboah. He went a perfect 13 for 13, over 200 yards and a touchdown when targeting the slot. Generated, it was the second most EPA per pass play in a single game against Alabama since 2016. And the only team that ever topped that was Clemson in the national championship game in 2018. I mean, it was even better than Joe Burrow's LSU Tigers last year. I mean, it was incredible that I am thoroughly impressed that he took this unit, which granted, there's good players in there, but I'm not sure if there's many people in college football that can take that offense and go toe-to-toe with Alabama full length of the game.
He's a tremendous, tremendous play caller. I think we kind of forgot that. When he left the Power Five for a few years, but he is such a good play caller, understands play design, understands how to break the rules of the defenses that he's playing against. And he honestly, like, Matt Corral might be a really good quarterback. Like, he wasn't last year. There's a reason he got benched for John Reese Plumlee, but he's such a perfect fit for Lane Kiffin's offense. And he has another big day. And yeah, I agree. I'm not ready to say that they're going to be a powerhouse program yet, but he can definitely
I'm all in.
He can definitely put them on that level. Look, they got to go and recruit defense. Like, we know that's going to be the main thing, but the offense should be good every year going forward. Okay. Georgia pulls away in the second half from Tennessee. I think this was another game where Georgia, we maybe deluded ourselves again, thinking this might be close to me. And honestly, it was for a half, but then Georgia just has too much good players on their team. Like, that, I don't know what else to say about that. I'm not sure Stetson Bennett is this all world quarterback, but he does what he's supposed to do. And that's throw the ball to a very talented group of receivers who, you know, they were without George Pickens for a while in that game because of that fucking hilarious squirting 15-yard penalty. And yet, yo, Kyrus Jackson step up, Burton step up. Like, they have so many players on that team. And I think the depth just wore Tennessee out in the second half.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it was definitely a tale of two halves, like, on both sides of the ball. Stetson Bennett made me regret everything I said about him in the first half. I thought he could be, you know, a reliable game manager type of quarterback, and he was in the second half. He went from, you know, a sub 55.0 passing grade to one just north of 80, which isn't at that elite threshold there, but that's still a very good, great passing grade. In the defense, I mean, they put on the clamps in the second half. I mean, they were the best SEC defense in the second half of week six by far. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, I'm definitely worried about this team going up against Alabama just because they cannot afford to get off to a slow start at all whatsoever, just because I think Alabama's going to come out guns a-blazing. Mac Jones, I mean, that wide receiver trio, I wasn't expecting much from John Mechie, but man, I mean, that's going to be a lethal wide receiver trio, and I'm worried about that game next week. I think Alabama, I think they're going to get out to a big lead, and it's going to be a blowout from there on out.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we'll talk about this game on when we record on Wednesday. Oh, yeah. But
sorry about that. I got too excited.
No. I'm setting it up for the listeners. But yeah, I agree. I think one of the problems is, like, Mac Jones, and whether it's the pieces around him or whatnot, He's just that much better of a quarterback than Stetson Bennett. I don't think that's really a question. And Bennett has been good because, like I said, he's been surrounded by really good players, whereas Mac Jones has been good and he's surrounded by really good players. So, yeah, I think I agree with you. I think going into that game next week, Alabama, Georgia, they got to go right off the bat because Mac Jones is hitting on all cylinders right now. Okay, staying in the SEC, this is an upset, but also maybe not even that big of an upset. Texas A&M comes back, beats Florida 41-38 on a last-second field goal. Kyle Trask is probably closer to the Kyle Trask that he's been the last 2 weeks rather than week one against who? The Ole Miss defense. He's good. He's a good college quarterback, but the offense goes through some talented playmakers rather than it going through Kyle Trask. And they scored a lot of points, but Texas A&M comes back and beats them. What did you see in this game? Is Kellen Mond the savior? What's going on here?
Yeah, I think Florida kind of confirmed my priors there. I thought they were a huge boom or bust type of team. And I thought they could give maybe Alabama a run for their money, but they absolutely needed their wide receiver unit that lost three receivers to the NFL last year and their secondary to step up. They definitely needed Marco Wilson to get back to what he showed back in 2017, just before he tore his ACL. It wasn't the same last year. They needed to get him back to form. They needed those two units to really kind of bring out, stand out, to kind of carry Kyle Trask. And I think Kyle Trask is, you know, it kind of sucks that they played Ole Miss the very first week of the year, because now everybody's opinion is set in stone about who Kyle Trask is. And I don't think he's that guy, just because this Florida offense was rolling. I mean, they were rolling over Texas A&M. They were very efficient on a per play basis, but their most efficient plays didn't come from Kyle Trask throwing down the football field. You know, he was dumping off a few yards past the line of scrimmage. You know, the receiver gets 9 yards, 10 yards out after the catch. And even in some instances, gets an explosive play. I mean, this past week, they had 8 explosive plays of 15 or more yards when they targeted 9 yards or less downfield. That was twice more than any other team that played this week. So I think that kind of defines what kind of offense they are. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Kyle Trask, his decision-making is definitely better. And I'm not sure if you agree with that, but I do think he's getting a little bit better in that regard, but I don't think he's ever going to be, like you said, I think he's a good college quarterback. Yeah, that secondary, Kyir Elam, he's going to be a star. He is an absolute stud back there. But Marco Wilson, after manning the slot, kicked him back over to outside this week. He gave up, I think, 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards, 7 catches. I mean, it was just bad all the way around outside of Kyir Elam.
All right, we'll go to the ACC for a bit here. Notre Dame does what they're supposed to do against Florida State, 42-26. Ian Book is not developed the way I would have liked him to, but I think there's so much talent there. You know, we talked about the offensive line maybe being the best in the country. They paved the way for Kyren Williams, 19 carries, 185 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So maybe he doesn't have to be. He probably will be, need to be, when they do play against Clemson in a few weeks. But so far, so good for Notre Dame. The defense played pretty well. And on the other side of the field, okay, look, they're not ready. They're just not ready, Florida State. Another quarterback change last week. Jordan Travis came in. He played as what we'd expect a freshman, or I think he might be a redshirt freshman, to play. 204 yards. I think he grades out to about 63 in just passing grade. We finally had at least a Tamarion Terry game, 9 catches, 146 yards, and a touchdown. But I would imagine this game went as you'd expect it.
Yeah, I mean, not to start, I was a little concerned there. And yeah, I'm happy we finally got to see Tamarion Terry kind of break out, just because I think if he was in, I mean, any average-ish offense, that guy would be one of the best wide receivers in college football. I think he is. I just think he's underutilized in a really bad situation. And to Notre Dame's point, I think they need Ian Book to be what Kyle Trask is for Florida. And he's not all the way there yet. And I do think there is some concern, because I mean, this Florida State defense isn't bad. That's why I thought they would be at least somewhat better than they were last year, is because from top to bottom, that's a really good defense. and Ian Book kind of struggled there for a little bit. So I think it's going to be, I think they have the offensive line, the defense to stand with Clemson, but they don't have anything remotely close to the quarterback. They just need someone that can be mistake-free. I'm not sure they can be that against a, you know, a big powerhouse like Clemson.
Okay, North Carolina finally put some points on the board. They're finally able to hit some plays down the field. Sam Howell to his dynamic receiving core. They beat Virginia Tech 56-45. You know, like, I'm honestly still not even sold on North Carolina because Virginia Tech is also, again, without so many players. They looked, North Carolina did not look good against Syracuse. They did not look great against Boston College. And now they play against the Virginia Tech team. Yeah, okay, they're ranked number 19, but they are without another 20 players. And like, I think another coach was out. So they at least they were able to explode on offense. And we've been waiting for that. But what else did you see in this game that you liked or didn't like?
Yeah, I'm finally happy that he actually hit a deep ball for a change. He's getting me worried there. Didn't have one through 2 weeks, and he had two beautiful ones for touchdowns, two great big-time throws. But I want to see more of that. I want them to call more shots downfield. I kind of feel like they're being a little bit more conservative than they were last year. I'm not sure if you think the same thing there, but, I mean, that running back two of Javonta Williams and Michael Carter, man, they went absolutely bananas in this one. They had 14 explosive plays, five more than any other backfield of week six, the most ever actually in a single game by an ACC team. So, I'm not completely sold on North Carolina yet. I thought they would be a little bit better. I really like the running back duo, but yes, I think they need to call more shots for Sam Howell. I mean, that was the backbone of their success last year. They have deep threats there. I mean, Diami Brown, I mean, that and Daz Newsome. I mean, those are two great deep threats for Sam Howell. I want to see more shots down the football field.
All first-time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight that put at least $20 into their account while using promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. So that's a $40 value for just $20. And you'll get that opportunity to turn that $20 into even more money playing daily fantasy football and prop games at one of the fastest growing fantasy sports sites in the USA in Monkey Knife Fight. Go to Monkey Knife Fight and deposit your $20 with promo code PFF today to receive your free PFF Edge annual subscription. PFF and Sunday Night Football's Chris Collinsworth is teaming up with one of the best players on and off the field, 49ers All-Pro cornerback Richard Sherman. The Chris Collinsworth podcast featuring Richard Sherman is available now wherever you find your podcasts. They will provide the most interesting football conversation in sports every week. And sometimes that means the discussion will venture off the field too. Additionally, Chris will be taking a dive into the game of football as he sees it, inviting in the best and brightest to talk about everything that is happening in the great game of football. Mark your calendars. You do not want to miss the best 60 minutes of insight this season. All right, moving back to the SEC, Arkansas beats Auburn 28-27 because Bo Nix fumbles at the end of the game and Arkansas wins. Unfortunately, that didn't actually happen. Auburn wins 30-28 on a weird play, last-second field goal. Very unfortunate for Arkansas because they played their hearts out. And I don't even want to blame the referees because it's such a bang-bang play and it's such an irregular play that happens where the quarterback fumbles the snap and then still tries to spike it. And then more than that, it's not even that all happened. It's that you see the quarterback do that type of motion as a referee, you just blow the whistle. And it sucks because he clearly threw the ball backwards. It was clearly a fumble. And even if, you know, they don't blow the whistle and Auburn recovers the ball, it's still like 8 yards back. And that, and you know, we're talking about college kickers here. So who knows if Carlson actually ends up, you know, hitting the kick about 8 yards further as he had missed one previously. But on Auburn's side, you know, Bo Nix is who we thought he was. He just is not, he is not developed at all, really. Right?
No, not at all. I mean, he was, I'm curious to see, you know, what the Auburn staff and Gus were thinking with Bo Nix, just because he barely attacked downfield. He had an average depth of target of under 5 yards. And I mean, it was kind of, I felt bad for Bo Nix just a little bit in that Georgia game last week, just because he was under pressure so much. I mean, it was bad to watch, and he can't make those decisions. I mean, you could tell even with that spike there, his decision-making all the way around and processing is just, it's just not there at the quarterback position like it needs to be for an Auburn quarterback. And so he was under pressure just a little bit less, but still, we barely saw him go downfield, just 3 completions over 10 yards. You know, I think everyone's kind of coming to the consensus now that this isn't the SEC freshman of the year. He's not who we thought he was. You know, the 5 stars are great coming out. They look pretty. You want to convince yourself that they're always going to be right. He's going to develop into, you know, your guy. You're going to have, you know, 3 years of great success. He's going to go on to the NFL. You're going to bring in all your recruits because you had success with Bo Nix. But that's just not who he is.
Okay, we'll go. Our one non-P5 top 25 game was BYU hanging on 27-20 over Texas San Antonio. You know, last week we talked about how Trevor Lawrence might end up with a higher overall grade than Joe Burrow did in 2019. Actually, we got to start talking about how Zach Wilson might end up with a higher PFF grade than Joe Burrow in 2019. He has been outstanding. Another grade above 90 for him. I think it's like now he's on the, at the season, he's of a 95 passing grade. He's been outstanding. You know, kind of an interesting game coming up for them against Houston, and then the big one in a few weeks against Boise State. Their offensive line is great. The quarterback is great. You know, the receivers can make plays. This team is really good. They are a true death machine.
Yeah, I mean, he was near perfect from a clean pocket when, and I was kind of surprised that he was under pressure as much as he was, and it really wasn't even all that much. I mean, probably, I mean, about a third of the time, but I was expecting maybe a 15-20% pressure rate just because this BYU offensive line is stout. But yeah, he's putting up incredible numbers, and it, you know, it's a shame because I want to see him play, you know, tougher competition, just because, I mean, even they won the game, sure, but UTSA by 7. I mean, if you want to even with the schedule they have and they want to make the playoff, you got to be blowing the doors off these guys. You have to be winning by 30 points because, I mean, 7 points to UTSA isn't going to cut it. But Zach Wilson, he did play really well. The defense, I'm not so sure about. But also, UTSA's quarterback. I don't even know how to say his name.
Lowell Narcisse, baby. LSU transfer. LSU. Lowell Narcisse. He was bad last year, and he had a great game.
Yeah, I mean, he was really bad last year. I remember in the preseason, we were doing our college magazine, and I was trying to figure out who was going to start for UTSA. And I was like, man, this little Narcisse guy, he just does not have it. You know, there's no way he's going to see the field again. And then I was watching this guy at 2:30 a.m. this morning, and my jaw dropped. I couldn't believe it. That was my coffee right there, just watching this guy throw two seeds downfield. I was shocked at the turnaround in the Roadrunners offense from Frank Harris to Lowell Narcisse. I mean, it was incredible. He went 8 for 9 for 187 yards, 2 touchdowns on throws of 10 or more yards downfield. I mean, it was complete night and day. He's going to have a PFF grade above 90.0, that elite mark. He never even sniffed that last year. Most of the time he was in the 40s or 50s. So, I mean, Zach Wilson was great, but Lowell Narcisse, that was a secret superstar in that game.
All right. Missouri beats LSU 45-41. We're not going to talk about that. Oklahoma 53.
Even without their best player, Kobe Whiteside, they got beat. That was, I will say one thing. I saw some people say that Miles Brennan was the issue with this game. He was the best player by far. I thought this was an excellent game from Miles Brennan. You know, that defense, there were so many busted coverages. I mean, from Jabril Cox to Clark to even Jacoby Stevens, there were so many coverage busts. It was incredible to see.
I said we weren't going to talk about this game.
I have to give the people what they want. I have to let them know the truth.
Miles Brennan was great. He was honestly great. I mean, it's not a great Missouri team or defense, but he was legit. Terrace Marshall was legit. Couldn't run the ball. Doesn't matter. I think the thing with LSU, and I'm trying to put a positive spin on this, is like they're going to be in a ton of games, even against Alabama, even against next week against Florida, because this offense is for real. And it bothered, like, I keep thinking about, like, hey, why couldn't we just run some sort of spread offense? for the past 10 years and rather than just the past 2 years. And LSU would have probably won a lot more games against better teams because the defense, yeah, they're terrible. I mean, they're absolutely terrible. But if you can score points, you're going to be in games until the end. And LSU was in this game until the last play. And obviously should have won the game at the end. I haven't like rewatched the film of the defense. So I'm not ready to say like, you know, they need to fire Bo Pelini or any of that stuff. But I guess I'm trying to spin in that I am excited about the offense. I wasn't sure what they were going to give us this year, but with the scheme and there's obviously tremendous talent at receiver, even though they lost so many players from last year, that I think they're going to be fine going forward. Okay, we're done with that.
But also that brings up another good thing about Mississippi State. I mean, it's amazing what all you have to do is play zone coverage, drop eight, and KJ Costello's toast. I mean, that's exactly what Arkansas did. Kentucky followed that to a T. The dude gets benched for a few series, and all these people – if all my time working at PFF, I don't think I've ever had more college fans upset with my take that KJ Costello's 623-yard passing game is not going to amount to anything. And, you know, here we are. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. Just the stark difference just between, you know, you saw what LSU did versus what Arkansas and Kentucky. And, you know, even with LSU, with all those pieces lost, there's still more talent there than, you know, Kentucky and Arkansas. I really like some of the pieces Kentucky has, but at the end of the day, I'm taking LSU's unit over them. So, I mean, it was an interesting observation just to see how all that transpired.
It sounds so simplistic just to say like, hey, just like put a bunch of guys in zone coverage. And it doesn't even matter which coverage, you know, which type of like quote unquote zone coverage you're going to play. And it works though. Like it just works against this, you know. I looked at those stats after the Mississippi State game, after the LSU Mississippi State game, but like they do not play, their EPA per play when teams drop eight guys in coverage is not good. It's just, it's really bad. So I don't know what Bo Pelini was thinking that first game. But kudos to Arkansas and Kentucky for like not being dumb. That's really what it comes down to. You're just not being ignorant to the data that you have. Anyways, finally getting on to the Red River shootout. 53, Oklahoma wins in like triple overtime, 53-45. Big comeback. You know, Oklahoma looked like they were going to run away with it at some point, and then a big comeback by Texas in the fourth quarter. Ellinger is just not the guy who's going to win a Heisman. You know, whatever. I knew he wasn't actually going to win the Heisman, but I was expecting more. Trevor Lawrence is going to win the Heisman. I know that. You know, maybe Mac Jones gets into the conversation at some point. I know that. But I thought, okay, this is finally the year where he had graded very well for us last year, and he had become a better passer each year. And then this year, it's just, you know, the receiver core is depleted compared to years prior, but he just hasn't been anything. And then on the other side of the ball, Spencer Rattler, we know he has the arm talent. It's ridiculous, but he's got to learn how to play quarterback. And I still think Oklahoma is probably the best team in this conference, even with two losses now. But this was at least a fun game.
Yeah. You know, and the only reason why, so, I mean, Sam Ellinger, I do want to give him just a little bit of credit just because the only reason why Texas even got back into that game is just because of the scrambles he busted up at the end of the fourth quarter and plus in overtime. That's the only reason why they're in it. But his passing, I mean, it was atrocious. On throws of 10 or more yards downfield, the guy went 3 for 17, 2 interceptions, 9 quarterback fault incompletions. So think like overthrows, underthrows, you name it. And then a 2.2 passer rating. In 20 plus yard throws, he put up a goose egg on 11 attempts. It was against Oklahoma's defense. I mean, granted, it's not for a Big 12 team. It's okay. It's nothing special. But I mean, you should be putting up numbers against that kind of defense if you're going to be, you know, like you said, like a Heisman type of guy. You know, that receiving unit, like you said, it's not great. I do like Joshua Moore. I think he's definitely the best of the bunch. But I think there's a pretty steep drop off after him. So, I mean, it's not the, you know, the best situation, and last year's was definitely better, but you can't have those kind of games like that. And yeah, like you said, Spencer Rattler, you know, some people are writing him off, but I'm still giving him some time. This was only his, you know, the fourth career game, you know, starting at quarterback. You know, I wish he was a little bit more refined like Baker and Kyler. I thought he would be, I still think he can be as good as those two. Just like you said, that arm talent is ridiculous. I think, you know, here in a few games, he's going to, you know, kind of wipe out those decisions. But, you know, I think that's probably going to be his point of emphasis with Lincoln Riley, just because I'm not sure if he did get hurt that to start and they were just like, oh, let's be precautious, or, you know, they pulled him and he was just kind of acting like, well, I'm going to act like my shoulder's hurt or something, because I don't want people to know I got pulled or something. But I mean, either way, I think he does have a bright future. Sam Ellinger, on the other hand, not so much.
All right. And finishing off in the Big 12, Iowa State does what they're supposed to do against a pretty bad Texas Tech team, 31-15. Brock Purdy, kind of a bounce back game. You know, he'll grade somewhere in the passing grade of somewhere around like 80, which is good. Honestly, that's good. And it's kind of what you're supposed to do against a terrible Texas Tech game. Another big game from Breece Hall, 135 yards, 2 touchdowns. I don't know if you agree with me. I think you do. Like, let's not take too much from Iowa State being 3-1 overall and 3-0 in the Big 12. But with that said, I don't even want to say this, but it's like they're almost like locked into battling out for a slot in the Big 12 title game, even though I think we both agree that they haven't looked particularly amazing this year. But they're undefeated in conference. You know, Oklahoma has 2 losses. Texas has 2 losses now. So this might be a team we see play in the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. I think also my biggest takeaway of this weekend's games is that the Big 10 is the best conference in college football. And people are going to think that's a hot take. But I hope Iowa State the best. I hope they get to the Big 12 title game. I hope they win it. I hope every team wins it. I'm not biased. But at the end of the day, I do not want to see a Big 12 team in the college football playoff. I need to see two Big Ten teams in there, just because it's going to be more competitive. But that being said, Brock Purdy, he didn't have any big time throws on the day, but most importantly,
yes, exactly.
He limited negatively graded throws. He was one of the worst the last few weeks in that category. He was second best behind only Mac Jones this week. I would take a quarterback that limits negatively graded throws over that can produce big time throws repeatedly any day right now. And I think that's their key to victory. If they can get Brock Purdy, yeah, I think he's getting back into tune, finding his accuracy. Maybe he just had the yips. You know, it happens to all of us, you know, in any sport, you get the yips. I think he might've had that. I'm being positive with this one, but he looked pretty good.
Yeah. And big game next week, at Oklahoma State, that's going to go a long way, you know, 2 undefeated teams in conference there. That's going to go a long way. And again, telling us who is going to represent the Big 12 in their championship game. I think interestingly enough, like I said, with TCU's got 2 losses, Texas got 2 losses, and Oklahoma has 2 losses in conference. At least maybe we can see some cool type of Big 12 title game with, you know, Iowa State, Kansas State, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Kansas State versus Oklahoma State, something like that. One of those, 2 of those 3 teams in the Big 12 title game to give some spice. But I agree, this conference looks pretty weak. All right, that's enough from us. Just getting you caught up on Saturday's action, and we will be back on Thursday. Thanks for listening.